a regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Glad that I have power so I can be with you today. We did not have quite the ice and snow event that they were calling for. I am grateful because I know that other parts of the country did get hit hard. So hopefully you are doing all right as well. Obviously, a very busy weekend in terms of Second Amendment news and information. You had the shooting of this anti-ICE individual in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Alex Pretty. And then we have seen what I can only describe as several administration officials repeating gun control talking points, right? Why was this guy carrying to a protest? Who brings two extra magazines to a protest? This ranges, unfortunately, from President Trump on down to FBI Director Cash Patel, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. Meanwhile, you've had this odd, reaction to this by people on the left saying that, Pretty had a Second Amendment right to carry at a protest, even though several of these individuals have argued you can't do that. California Governor Gavin Newsom pointing to some of the comments made by the administration says, oh, well, it's good to know that they don't recognize the Second Amendment. Gavin Newsom signed a law that bans concealed carry at protests and public assemblies in California. So I guess he now acknowledges that he too doesn't believe in the Second Amendment, something we've known, by the way, for quite some time. So join me to talk about all of this, as well as, you know, what the laws are regarding carrying at protests and publicly permitted events, which doesn't wait. Vary from state to state. Costas Morris of the Second Amendment Foundation going to be with us. So Costas also just got back from his very first SHOT Show. So I'm going to get to Costas' thoughts on that. I was kind of hoping we'd have some Supreme Court news to talk about, but once again, Supreme Court taking no action on Duncan versus Bonta, Villamontes versus Cook County, none of the other 2A cases that it's been holding on to. So might ask Costas, you know, what he thinks about that, but no new cert grants and no rejections, no denials coming out of today's orders as well. All right. So with that as the setup, let's get to our conversation with the Second Amendment Foundation's Costas Morris. Take a look and a listen. Costas, thanks so much for joining me on the program. It's really good to see you here. I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Anytime.
And a lot to talk about. Before we talk about Minnesota, I should let you know that I think you and I are going to have something in common here because Virginia Democrats have amended their gun and magazine ban bill to remove the grandfather clause for current possession of magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds. So they're going the California route. And I'm even more hopeful now that the Supreme Court will address this issue in Duncan versus Bonta.
Yeah, let's hope, because otherwise you'll be just like California, except without the great weather and the excellent taco shops. So you don't even get the perks. You just have the gun bans.
I do know a pretty good taco shop. I got to drive an hour to get there, but I've got to drive an hour to get anywhere where I live. The weather not so great, although at least my power stayed on. So knock on wood, I'm at least able to do my job. And as I said, there is a lot to talk about regarding what happened in Minneapolis over the weekend. Any number of, you know, directions that we could take this, but I wanted to start with this weird, you know, almost this inversion of talking points, right? We've seen folks on the right talk about, why does anybody need two magazines? Why was somebody carrying a pistol with a threaded barrel? And on the left, we've seen people like Gavin Newsom saying, well, you know, Alex Pretty was exercising his Second Amendment right to carry out a protest when Governor Newsom signed a law prohibiting lawful carry at protests and public assemblies, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think everyone's just jumping to their partisan corners right now, and it's very frustrating because nobody's operating in good faith. On the one hand, you have some administration officials, probably the ones, you know, like Scott Bessent and others, saying every foolish thing they can, you know, and trying to rush out justifications like suggesting that carrying two magazines is somehow makes it okay, or somehow makes this person a threat. And then on the other hand, you have people that have never found a Second Amendment or sorry, have never supported the Second Amendment are all of a sudden espousing it, like Gavin Newsom, as you said, as well as others. So it's silly season. Everyone's just trying to make the most out of a very controversial and sad situation. And it really speaks to the degradation of our politics, frankly, that this is happening.
Absolutely. Well, I will say the Second Amendment cosplay did not extend to the Democrats on the Virginia Courts of Justice Committee today. They referenced the shooting in Minneapolis, but only to promote the cause of gun control, right? So there was nobody saying, well, after what happened this weekend, I've got reservations about, you know, banning commonly owned magazines or assault firearms. None of that. This bill passed on party lines. And I mean, I have to say, I suspect that Gavin Newsom hasn't really changed his mind about anything. I suspect that Chris Brown is still from Brady is still opposed to carrying at publicly permitted events. Right. I mean, this, as you say, this is about, I think, political tribalism. Right. And so, you know, whatever you have to say to try to score talking points, to score points on the other side, that's what you do. I will say, though, I think there has been some consistency, and I think it's been from Second Amendment groups.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's where you've actually found some consistency. And I've been really pleased to see that, whether it's the Second Amendment Foundation, Gun Owners of America. In all honesty, I thought the NRA statement was probably the most milquetoast that I've seen from organizations that have put out statements. But even they said, you know, there needs to be an investigation. But, you know, I haven't seen any Second Amendment groups throw the Second Amendment under the bus.
Well, if we did that, what use would we be, right? Look, it's obviously because the Trump administration has done a lot, even though we disagree with them on some things, they've done a lot for the Second Amendment, and we don't discount that. So it is always uncomfortable, admittedly, to, you know, have to criticize them for something. I'm not going to deny that, but at the same time, our duty is to defend the Second Amendment rights of our members, not to look out for a sometimes political ally. And by the way, I'm hopeful that there has been no actual shift in the administration on the Second Amendment. This is just some talking points, frankly, from people who don't really operate in the Second Amendment space. It's not like Harmeet Dillon is out there saying things. It's people like Kash Patel and others who, you know, don't, it's not really their job to look out for the Second Amendment. So I'm hopeful there has been no shift, and we'll have to see. But regardless, our first loyalty is to our members and their rights, not to the administration.
And, you know, and that's something I pointed out in my first post at Bearing Arms today, is that we have not seen any policy changes, right? You haven't had President Trump come out and say, you know, Congress needs to limit the number of magazines that you can carry, right? There has been nothing of that nature. And so I suspect that you're right that, with the exception of Kristi Noem, I think, who has the very first bill she signed as governor was, constitutional carry.
Right.
Most of the individuals that we're, you know, that we've seen kind of adopt the language of gun control advocates, don't necessarily operate in a Second Amendment space. So Scott Bessent, for example, talked about somebody bringing two cartridges to this protest, right? So that suggests to me that Scott Bessent maybe not all that familiar with firearms
at all. Yeah.
Whether or not he should be talking about firearms, then in that context, I guess it's something for the White House comms office to discuss with him. So you know, one of the other things that we've seen over the course of this weekend, I think, is a great deal of confusion, but also I think in some cases intentional misinformation about what the law actually is in Minnesota, right? So, and that's what we've got to talk about, because there is no federal law regarding carrying at protests or political events, right? There's no federal law that says you've got to present an ID if you're carrying concealed. So we're in that sense, we're talking about Minnesota state statute, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's exactly right. And I want to say, obviously, I'm not a Minnesota lawyer, but I do take I have some lawyers there I trust implicitly, like the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus and the Rob Dorr, who works for them. And they've been very clear that carry at protests is not banned in Minnesota. But by the way, let's back up for a second.
Yeah.
we're just all assuming this was a protest, but I don't know that this even qualifies as a protest anyway. So there's two steps. I'm just taking the administration's stance, you know, giving them the benefit of the doubt. Okay, it was a protest, but even if it was, that's not illegal. You know, this right. was just like some informal interaction. This wasn't some organized, you know, picketing or something like that.
Yeah. And Jack Posobiec went after me on Twitter today for talking about, you know, a White House needs to kind of put a lid on these comments until they understand the law regarding carrying a protest. And his response, well, this wasn't a protest. Well, that's fine. I'm quoting Scott Bessent and Cash.
Right. Right.
And I think that there is an argument to be made that this was not a protest, that this was, you know, an activity designed to disrupt or impede a law enforcement activity. Right.
Right.
In which case that's not a protest. That is something else entirely. Which does raise some other questions. But, you know, I've seen a number of people will say that, well, Prady was carrying illegally because he didn't have his ID on him. From what Rob Doerr said, and by the way, I think Rob's going to be with us on tomorrow's program, that's something that's, you know, it's considered, what I think, a petty misdemeanor, which is not the same as a misdemeanor offense. It's basically punishable by a $25 fine, which is refundable as once you show, look, I've got my valid ID. I just didn't have it in my wallet. Or I didn't have my wallet with me. Kind of like driving without proof of insurance. As long as you show you've got insurance later, that fine's typically revoked. And that's what we're talking about here in Minnesota, right?
So, it's just so troubling to see people like Posobiec and others, I don't mean to pick on him in particular. You just mentioned him. But we've seen many of these people say things like slogan style things like every gun law is unconstitutional. Now they're going around saying, well, he didn't have his proper paperwork on him, as if the cops even knew that when this happened, you know. So it's absurd. Even if it were true, and maybe it were that, I don't know if he had his permit on him or not, but even if he didn't, that's not a death penalty offense. Like we're talking of, and regardless, again, the cops couldn't have possibly known that when right. this happened. So it's just, again, this goes back to what I said in the beginning, we're in silly season here. Everyone's just abandoning everything they've said previously to go to their partisan lines, which is very frustrating.
Yeah. And you know, absolutely, because you know, honestly, I hadn't, you know, my entire intention was that the administration needs to be correct in what they're saying.
Yeah,
I wasn't passing judgment on whether or not this was a good shoot or a bad shoot. I wrote at Bearing Arms yesterday. I'm leaning towards this being a lawful but awful scenario. But as you say, the question here is whether or not the officers who fired at and killed Mr. Pretty had a reasonable belief that their life, the lives of others, were in danger based on the totality of the circumstances, right? And they did not know that he had two magazines on him. They did not know that he did not have his permit on him. What they heard, what they knew was a, you know, gun, and then a shot was fired, and then shots were fired at Mr. Pretty. That's, you know, but I want to ask when, and again, maybe I don't know if you know the answer to this, but when you're considering the totality of the circumstances, how far back do you have to go? I mean, would a prosecutor or even an internal investigation look at, what happened in the 10 minutes leading up to this shooting? Or is it just at the moment the shots were fired, was there a reasonable belief that these officers' lives were in danger?
So the cynical answer was, if it were a private citizen, it would just be at the moment the shots were fired. With police, they'll look at the more context. That's a cynical thing to say, but but no, I'm sure they will look at the totality of the circumstances and see what the officer's state of mind was, and that's fair. I'm not a use of force expert. That's not my field. Sure. So I don't want to go, if you think it was lawful but awful, that could be true. My focus has been more on some of the comments made about the greater Second Amendment, like the U.S. Attorney Saley, who I'm usually a fan of, by the way, saying that, oh, merely approaching officers while armed is a bad idea. He later kind of clarified, he accused someone of, I forget which org, of adding words to his statements, but then he added words to his own statement and said, well, if you aggressively approach, but that's not the same thing. So that's what my deepest concern has been with all this. I have opinions on the actual shoot itself, but not ones I'm really qualified to speak on.
Yeah, so, no, and I'm not asking you to weigh in on that, but yeah. I'm glad that you bring up the first assistant to the U.S. Attorney's comments, because again, I think one of the common threads here is that, you know, we're seeing these sort of vague overarching statements that aren't just limited. They may be a response to what happened in Minnesota, but the statements themselves are not limited to what happened in Minnesota, right? And this is where, you know, look, I'm not being the grammar police, but when we have government officials talking, making statements that implicate our right to keep and bear arms, yes, I do expect them to be precise. I do expect them to say what they mean and to mean what they say. And I'm glad that the attorney did offer that clarification afterwards, even though he was, you know, kind of blame shifting onto the I think it was Aiden Johnson from Gunners of America, but it might have been.
I think it was somebody from GOA. Yeah, it might have been Aiden. Yeah.
It behooves these government officials to be precise in their language. That to me shouldn't be a controversial thing to say.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you don't need to, I'm guilty of this too, but I'm not a government official, but sometimes you don't need to rush out the hot take on Twitter. Just slow down a pace. I know it's a hot situation, but especially when you're a U.S. attorney, just, you know, slow it down a bit. It's okay. You know, you can wait a few hours and examine the facts and then say what you're going to say. But it seems like, again, I'm normally a fan of his, but it seems like he and others were rushing to defend the administration rather than rushing to do their jobs properly in this scenario.
So, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and I mean, I'm not going to ask you your opinion on this, but I think that you could say the same about the, you know, initial description of Peretti as a domestic terrorist.
Yeah.
Somebody who was, you know, clearly intent on massacring law enforcement. I don't think there's any evidence that's emerged that shows that was the case. And he certainly didn't draw his firearm or shoot at police officers, you know, before he was shot and killed. Listen, we're going to be talking about this, sadly, for a long time. And I hope that there are not more incidents like this to discuss in the future. But I do appreciate your perspective on all of this. And I want to ask you, I want to kind of shift topics here. Because you just got back or recently got back a couple days ago from your very first a visit to the Shooting Hunting Outdoor Trade Show, and I'm curious to get your take on what you saw and how many miles you walked.
Yeah, so it was incredible. So I will say that going in, I've heard for years about how big the show is, how overwhelmingly large. So I knew it was big, but I still didn't know until I got there, like, what we are talking about here. I couldn't have, even if I didn't have, because I did various interviews, met various people, meetings and all that. Even if I had a clear schedule for 4 days, I don't think I would have seen everything, you know, if I tried. It's just so large, so overwhelming. And I bothered a lot of people there about whether they're going to make California versions of their guns. The answer was usually no. So there's that. But it was a lot of fun. Met a lot of great people that I hadn't met in person before. I'm very glad I went. And I look, hopefully we'll go again next year. Yeah.
Well, I hope so. I was not able to make it out this year. And it's probably a good thing that I wasn't, since we did have this storm coming in. But I would love to get a chance to see you in person, if it's not at the Gun Rights Policy Conference later this year, then it, which is going to be in Dallas, Texas, by the way.
Yep.
Then hopefully it's shot. But Acostas, again, you know what? There was one more thing I wanted to ask you about. Supreme Court orders came out today. No Second Amendment cases granted, sir, but none denied either, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it looks like I'm not sure what's going on. Maybe someone's preparing some dissents, but the topics are so varied that I'm wondering if this court doesn't even know yet what it's going to do. Last week, there was a massacre of the 922 G1 petitions, mm-hmm. Which is interesting because I thought maybe they were going to hold those for Hamani, but they didn't. So I don't know if they know which way they're going on Hamani and they think it won't matter, but or it could be that they took the government in a lot of those petitions argued, well, we have this rights restoration process about to take effect soon. So maybe the court saw that as an excuse to punt, you know, they'll punt, yeah. They'll kick away these for now and they'll come back to it later if the rights restoration doesn't work out. But yeah, so other than the 922 G1s that all got wiped out last week, the various issues are all still there. The assault weapons and magazine cases that are most high profile, the 18 to 20 cases have kind of vanished for months now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not even being relisted. So they're right. Doing something with that. And then Schoenthal, which is our public transport carry case, probably a Wolford GVR, but we'll see. So yeah, there's all sorts of issues out there right now, and we'll have to see what they're going to do, because So far, no news, and we won't even get another conference for about a month. So at least we'll get to sleep in on Mondays. I will. For you, it's later in the day. But
I won't have to set my alarm to remember to go look at the Supreme Court website. Yeah, it's interesting. Todd Blanche from the DOJ actually said at SHOT Show that the rights restoration portal they think is going to be up and running by March. But, you know, also one of the cases that they hung on to, which was a 922G1 case, was the case of Melinda Vincent.
I'm speculating maybe they just picked that one because somebody's writing a dissent. That's the only thing I can think of because I can't think of anything different. Like maybe they want to explain why they're denying them, but they didn't need to hold all of them, so they just held one. Unless there's something different about that case that's interesting to them, so they're considering a cert grant. You never know, right? But or a Hamani GVR. So we'll just have to see.
Is there a deadline for the court to take action on these cases? Like you mentioned the under 21 cases, or let's even say, you know, Duncan versus Bonner and Villamontes versus Cook County. Let's assume, just for the sake of argument, the Supreme Court wants, in the cases of the gun and magazine ban cases, they're waiting on that Third Circuit opinion, which we believe will create a circuit court split. Could they just simply hold on to those cases for the rest of this term? Could they hold on to the under 21 cases for, you know, a year or two and then, you know, decide to do something with them? Or must they act in this term?
No. So they're the Supreme Court, so nobody gets to tell them what to do. They get to make up their own. The general practice is they like to clear their docket at the end of the term. However, in the past, it's rare, but they have held cases over to the next term that are pending for cert. And that's essentially what we asked them in our Duncan amicus brief. We said, Supreme Court, we hope you grant cert on this, but in the event you don't, please just hold it because we don't want that mandate getting issued and then we have to turn in magazines and then a year later you reach a ruling after we've turned in our magazines. So I'm hoping that I want a cert grant, but short of a cert grant, I'm hoping they at least just hold it until they find a case they do want to take and do a mass GVR. And yeah, nothing stops them from holding it indefinitely through the summer. They don't like to do it, but they can do it. And again, they're the Supreme Court, so they make the rules. There's no court to appeal to after that. So,
all right. Well, that is good to know. Costas Moros from the Second Amendment Foundation. Thank you, as always, for spending some time with us. A great conversation. Hope we get a chance to do it again soon.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thanks.
Again, my thanks to Costas for joining us on the program. Listen, we normally do our recidivist report, our good deed of the day, our armed citizen story. I am running a little behind today, I'll be honest with you. So we are going to keep this limited to our armed citizen story of the day. And hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to get back to our normal slate of post-interview stories. But today's armed citizen story comes from Florida. Fatal St. Petersburg robbery shooting is apparent self-defense, according to the police. The Tampa Bay Times reporting this was a Friday night. Police says, again, this appears to be a case of self-defense during a robbery attempt. Just happened after 6:30 Friday evening. St. Petersburg police say two armed men tried to rob two other men who were in a parked vehicle. But the men in that vehicle were also armed as well. Shots were fired. One of the robbers, who police identified as a 29-year-old Siltico Morand, was shot and pronounced deceased at the scene. The second robber taken to a local hospital with what was described as critical injuries. Police said in a news release, at this time, all the evidence points to a self-defense shooting, but there is additional investigative follow-up underway. As a result, the men who were detained and interviewed have not been charged for now, they say. I know their details immediately released. So we will keep our eyes open for any more details regarding that story. But if, again, the circumstances are what the police described, then I would think that the shooting itself would be a justified use of force. Again, there may be questions about the legality of the gun possession, you know, something else maybe unrelated to the shooting, but maybe, you know, some other crime committed. Right now, no indication of that. But again, we will keep our eyes open for any more details there out of the St. Petersburg area. Also, as I mentioned again, tomorrow we are hoping to get Rob Doerr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus on the program. I'd say we're like 90% locked in. I'm just waiting to get one final confirmation. And we'll obviously be talking more about what is going on there in Minnesota. A quickly evolving situation. President Trump announcing today that to Tom Homan, head of I believe Tom Homan is the head of ICE. Is that right? I think so. Anyway, he is heading to Minneapolis. He'll be reporting directly to the president. There are obviously some political ramifications involved there, but I think that's outside of our purview here at Bearing Arms Cam and Company, so I won't wade into that. But we'll definitely be keeping our eyes open for any more statements that do relate to our right to keep and bear arms coming from both the administration and then again from anti-gun politicians who are cosplaying as the supporters of the Second Amendment, like California Governor Gavin Newsom. I would encourage you to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today. We're keeping you up to date not only on what's going on in Minnesota, but in state legislatures around the country. Two just downright bonkers bills introduced in Hawaii. Virginia's gun and magazine ban just got worse. As I mentioned with Acostas, the grandfather clause removed for magazines. We're keeping you up to date on those situations, as well as legislation from elsewhere in the country. So, again, head over to BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, we encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, there's some great benefits involved. And, again, no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work that we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I greatly thank you for that. Have a good rest of your Monday, as good as Mondays can be. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe and be free.